107. The First Step. There is very little information about Ba Edo Mishram in more modern times. I can only assume she, unlike many of them, returned to damnation or was destroyed during a Hariyatiyam. From Hesse's Mythica, page 226. Dalinar found a wash basin ready for him in the morning. Navani meticulously kept it filled, just as she cleaned up the bottles and allowed the servants to bring him more. She trusted him better than he trusted himself. Stretching in his bed, Dalinar woke feeling far too whole, considering the drinking he'd been doing. Indirect sunlight illuminated the room from the window. Normally they kept the shutters in this room closed to ward off the cold mountain air. Navani must have opened them after rising. Dalinar splashed his face with water from the basin, then caught a hint of his own scent.
Right.
He looked into one of the connecting rooms, which they'd appropriated for a washroom, as it had a back entrance the servants could use. Sure enough, Navani had ordered the tub filled for him. The water was cold, but he'd known his share of cold baths. It would keep him from lingering. A short time later, he took a razor to his face, peering at himself in a bedroom mirror. Gavilar had taught him to shave. Their father had been too busy getting himself cut apart in foolish duels of honor, including the one where he'd taken a blow to the head. He'd never been right after that. Beards were unfashionable in Alethkar these days, but that wasn't why Dalinar shaved. He liked the ritual, the chance to prepare, to cut away the nightly chaff and reveal the real person underneath, furrows, scars, and harsh features included. A clean uniform and underclothes waited for him on a bench. He dressed, then checked the uniform in the mirror, pulling down on the bottom of the coat to tighten any folds. That memory of Gavilar's funeral. So vivid. He'd forgotten parts. Had that been the Night Watcher or the natural course of memories? The more he recovered of what he had lost, the more he realized that the memories of men were flawed. He'd mention an event now fresh to his mind, and others who had lived it would argue over details as each recalled it differently. Most, Navani included, seemed to remember him as more noble than he deserved. Yet he didn't ascribe any magic to this. It was simply the way of human beings, subtly changing the past in their minds to match their current beliefs. But then, that vision with Noadon, where had that come from? Just a common dream? Hesitant, he reached out to the Stormfather, who rumbled distantly.
Still there, I see, Dalinar said, relieved.
Where would I go?
I hurt you, Dalinar said, when I activated the Oath Gate. I was afraid you would leave me.
This is the lot I have chosen. It is you or oblivion.
I'm sorry, regardless, for what I did. Were you involved in that dream I had? The one with Noadon?
I know of no such dream.
It was vivid, Dalinar said. More surreal than one of the visions, true, but captivating.
What was the most important step a man could take? The first, obviously. But what did it mean? He still bore the weight of what he had done at the Rift. This recovery, this stepping away from the week spent drinking, wasn't a redemption. What would he do if he felt the thrill again? What would happen the next time the weeping in his mind became too difficult to bear? Dalinar didn't know. He felt better today, functional. For now, he would let that be enough. He picked a piece of lint off his collar, then belted on a side sword and stepped out of the bedroom, walking through his study and into the larger room with the hearth.
Teravangian?
He said, surprised to find the elderly king seated there.
Wasn't there to be a meeting of the monarchs today?
He vaguely remembered Navani telling him of it early that morning.
They said I wasn't needed.
Nonsense. We're all needed at the meetings. Dalinar paused. I've missed several, haven't I? Well, regardless, what are they talking about today?
Tactics.
Dalinar felt his face go red. The deployment of troops in the defense of Yakaved, your kingdom?
I think they believe that I will give up the throne of Yakaved once a suitable local man has been found.
He smiled.
Do not be so outraged on my behalf, my friend. They didn't forbid me. They simply noted I wasn't needed. I wanted some time to think, so I came here.
Still, let's go up, shall we?
Taravangian nodded, standing. He wobbled on unsteady legs, and Dalinar hurried over to help him. Stabilized, Taravangian patted Dalinar's hand.
Thank you. You know, I've always felt old, but lately it seems my body is determined to give me persistent reminders.
Let me summon a palanquin to carry you.
No, please. If I give up walking, I fear my deterioration will increase. I've seen similar things happen to people in my hospitals.
But he held Dalinar's arm as they walked toward the doorway. Outside, Dalinar collected some guards of his own, along with Taravangian's large Thalen bodyguard. They started toward the lifts.
Do you know, Dalinar said, if there's word?
From Kolinar?
Taravangian asked. Dalinar nodded. He vaguely remembered updates from Navani. No news of Adolin, Elokar, or the Radiance. But had he been of sound enough mind to listen?
I'm sorry, Dalinar,
Taravangian said.
So far as I know, we haven't had a message from them. But we must keep hope, of course. They might have lost their span reed or gotten trapped in the city.
I may have felt something, the Stormfather said. During a recent high storm, it felt like Stormblessed was there with me. I do not know what it means, for I cannot see him or the others anywhere. I presumed them dead, but now I find myself believing. Why?
You have hope, Dalinar whispered, smiling.
Dalinar?
Taravangian asked.
Just whispering to myself, Your Majesty.
If I might say, you seem stronger today. You've decided something?
More. I've remembered something.
Is it something you can share with a worried old man?
Not yet. I'll try to explain once I have it figured out myself.
After an extended trip up the lifts, Dalinar led Taravangian into a quiet, windowless chamber on the penultimate floor of the tower. They dubbed it the Gallery of Maps, after a similar location in the war camps. Aladar led the meeting, standing beside a table that was covered by a large map of Alethkar and Yakaved. The dark-skinned Alethi man wore his war uniform, the mix of a traditional Takama shirt and modern jacket that had been catching on among his officers. His bodyguard, Mintez, stood behind him in full shard plate. Aladar preferred not to use the shards personally. He was a general, not a warrior. He nodded to Dalinar and Taravangian when they entered. Iole sat nearby and studied Dalinar, saying nothing. He'd almost have welcomed a wisecrack. In the old days, she'd been quick to joke with him. Her silence now didn't mean she was being respectful. It meant she was saving her barbs to whisper where he couldn't hear. High Prince Ruthar, thick-armed and wearing a full beard, sat with Iole. He'd opposed Dalinar from the start. The other Alethi High Prince who had come today was Hatham, a long-necked man with light orange eyes. He wore a red and gold uniform of a type that Dalinar hadn't seen before, with a short jacket that buttoned only at the top. Silly-looking, but what did Dalinar know of fashion? The man was extremely polite, and he ran a tight army. Queen Fen had brought the Thalen High Admiral, a scrawny old man with mustaches that drooped almost to the table. He wore a short sailor's saber and sash and looked like exactly the type who would complain about being stuck on the land for too long. She'd also brought her son, the one Dalinar had dueled, who saluted Dalinar sharply. Dalinar saluted back. That boy would make an excellent officer if he could learn to keep his temper. The Azish Emperor wasn't there, nor was their little edge dancer. Instead, Azir had sent a collection of scholars. Azish generals tended to be of the armchair type, military historians and theorists who spent their days in books. Dalinar was certain they had men with practical knowledge in their military, but those rarely ended up promoted. So long as you failed certain tests, you could remain in the field and command. Dalinar had met the two Vaden High Princes during his trip to their city. The brothers were tall, prim men with short black hair and uniforms much like those of the Aleti. Taravangian had appointed them after their predecessors had been poisoned following the civil war. Yakaved obviously still had many problems.
Dalinar? Aladar said. He stood up straighter, then saluted.
Right, Lord. You're looking better.
Storms, how much did the rest of them know? I've spent some time in meditation, Dalinar said. I see you've been busy. Tell me about the defensive array.
Well, Aladar said, we...
That's it, Queen Fen interrupted. What in damnation was wrong with you? You ran all around Vedinar like a wild man, then locked yourself in your room for a week.
I was excommunicated from the Boren Church soon after hearing of Kolinar's fall. I took it poorly. Did you expect me to react by throwing a feast?
I expected you to lead us, not sulk.
I deserved that. You are right. You can't have a commander who refuses to command. I'm sorry.
The Azish whispered among themselves, looking surprised at the bluntness of the exchange. But Fen settled back and Aladar nodded. Dalinar's mistakes had needed to be aired. Aladar began explaining their battle preparations. The Azish generals, all wearing robes and western hats, crowded around, offering commentary through translators. Dalinar used a little stormlight and touched one on the arm to gain access to their language for a short time. He found their advice surprisingly astute, considering that they were basically a committee of scribes. They'd moved 10 battalions of Aleti troops through the Oath Gates, along with 5 battalions of Azish. That put 15,000 men on the ground in Yakaved, including some of their most loyal Kolin and Aladar forces. That seriously cut into his troop numbers. Storms, they'd lost so many at Narak. The companies that Dalinar had remaining at Urethiru were mostly recruits or men from other princedoms who had asked to join his military. Sabario, for example, had cut back to maintaining only a single division, giving Dalinar the rest to wear Kolin colors. Dalinar had interrupted a discussion of how to fortify the Yakaved border. He offered some insights, but mostly listened as they explained their plans. Stockpiles here, garrisons there. They hoped the Windrunners would be able to scout for them. Dalinar nodded, but found that something bothered him about this battle plan. A problem he couldn't define. They'd done well, their lines of supply had been drawn realistically, and their scout posts were spaced for excellent coverage. What then was wrong? The door opened, revealing Navani, who froze when she saw Dalinar, then melted into a relieved smile. He nodded to her as one of the Vaden High Princes explained why they shouldn't abandon the backwater strip of land running east of the Horneater Peaks. Aladar had been ready to cede it and use the peaks as a barrier.
"It's not only about the opportunity to levy troops from His Majesty's Horneater subjects, Bright Lord," the High Prince, Non-Urian, explained in Aleti. "These lands are lush and well-appointed, buffered from storms by the very Aleti highlands you've been speaking of. We've always fought desperately for them against invasions because they will succor those who seize them and provide staging areas for assaults on the rest of Yakaved."
Dalinar grunted. Navani stepped over to where most of them stood around the table map, so he reached out and put his arm around her waist.
"He's right, Aladar. I spent a long time skirmishing on that very border. That area is more important strategically than it first appears."
"Holding it is going to be tough," Aladar said. "We'll get mired in an extended battle for that ground."
Which is what we want, isn't it? The Vaden High Prince said. The longer we stall the invasion, the more time it will give my Vaden brethren to recover.
Yes, Dalinar said. Yes. It was easy to get mired in battles along the vast Vaden front. How many years had he spent fighting false bandits there?
Let's take a break. I want to consider this.
The others seemed to welcome the opportunity. Many stepped into the larger chamber outside, where attendants with span reeds waited to relay information. Navani stayed beside Dalinar as he surveyed the map.
It's good to see you up, she whispered.
You're more patient than I deserve. You should have dumped me out of bed and poured the wine on my head.
I had a feeling you'd push through.
I have for now, he said. In the past, a few days or even weeks of sobriety didn't mean much.
You're not the man you were back then.
Oh, Navani, I never grew beyond that man. I just hid him away. He couldn't explain that to her yet. Instead, he whispered thanks into her ear and rested his hand on hers. How could he ever have been frustrated at her advances? For now, he turned his attention to the maps and lost himself in them. The fortresses, the storm bunkers, the cities, the drawn-in supply lines.
What's wrong? Dalinar thought. What am I not seeing? 10 Silver Kingdoms, 10 Oath Gates, the keys to this war. Even if the enemy can't use them, they can hinder us by seizing them. One in Alethkar, which they already have. One in Natanatan, the Shattered Plains, which we have. One in Vaidenar, one in Azimir, one in Thalen City. All 3 hours. But one in Ral Elarim and one in Kurth, both the enemies by now. One in Shinovar, belonging to neither side.
That left the one in Penatham, in Babatharnam, which the combined Iriale and Riran armies might have captured already, and one in Akana, which Yasna was confident had been destroyed long ago. Yaakoved made the most sense for the enemy to attack, didn't it? Only, once you engaged yourself in Yaakoved, you were stuck fighting a long war of attrition. You lost mobility, had to dedicate enormous resources to it. He shook his head, feeling frustrated. He left the map, trailed by Navani, and stepped into the other room for refreshment. At the wine table, he forced himself to pour a warm, spiced orange, something with no kick. Yasna joined the group, delivering a stack of papers to her mother.
May I see?
Ile asked.
No,
Yasna replied. Dalinar hid a smile in his drink.
What secrets are you keeping?
Ile asked.
What happened to your uncle's grand talk of unification?
I suspect that each monarch in this room, Yasna said, would prefer to know that state secrets are allowed to remain their own. This is an alliance, not a wedding.
Queen Fen nodded at that.
As for these papers, Yasna continued, they happen to be a scholarly report which my mother has not yet reviewed. We will release what we discover once we are certain that our translations are correct and that nothing in these notes might give our enemies an advantage against this city.
Yasna cocked an eyebrow.
Or would you prefer our scholarship be sloppy?
The Azish seemed mollified by this.
I just think, Ile said, you showing up here with them is a slap in the face for the rest of us. Ile,
Yasna said,
it is good you are here. Sometimes an intelligent, dissenting voice tests and proves a theory. I do wish you'd work harder on the intelligent part.
Dalinar downed the rest of his drink and smiled as Ile settled back in her chair, wisely not escalating a verbal battle against Yasna. Unfortunately, Ruthar did not have similar sense.
Don't mind her, Ile, he said, mustache wet with wine. The godless have no concept of proper decency. Everyone knows that the only reason to abandon belief in the Almighty is so that you can explore vice.
Oh, Ruthar, Dalinar thought, you can't win this fight. Yasna has thought about the topic far more than you have. It's a familiar battleground to her.
Storms. That was it.
They aren't going to attack, Yakoved,
Dalinar shouted, interrupting Jasnah's rebuttal. Those in the room turned to him, surprised, Jasnah's mouth half open.
Dalinar?
High Prince Aladar asked.
We decided that Yakoved was the most likely...
No, Dalinar said. No! We know the terrain too well. The Alethi and the Vaidens have spent generations fighting over that land.
What then?
Jasnah asked. Dalinar ran back into the map room. The others fluttered in around him.
They went to Marat, right?
Dalinar asked.
They cut through Emul and into Marat, silencing Spanreeds nationwide. Why? Why go there?
Aesir was too well fortified, Aladar said. From Marat, the Voidbringers can strike at Yakoved from both the west and the east.
Through the bottleneck in Triax?
Dalinar asked.
We talk of Yakoved's weakness, but that's relative. They still have a huge standing army, strong fortifications. If the enemy wades into Yakoved now, while solidifying their own power, it will drain their resources and stall their conquest. That isn't what they want right now, when they still have the upper hand in momentum.
Where, then?
Nonurion asked.
A place that was hit hardest of all by the new storms,
Dalinar said, pointing at the map.
A place whose military might was severely undermined by the Everstorm. A place with an oath gate.
Queen Fen gasped, safe hand going to her lips.
Thalen City?
Navani asked.
Are you sure?
If the enemy takes Thalen City, Dalinar said, they can blockade Yakoved, Karbranth, and what few lands in Alethkar we still own. They can seize command of the entire southern depths and launch naval assaults on Tashik and Shinovar. They could swarm New Natnan and have a position from which to assault the Shattered Plains. Strategically, Thalen City is far more important than Yakoved, but at the same time, far worse defended.
But they'd need ships, Aladar said.
The Parshmen took our fleet, Fen said.
After that first terrible storm, Dalinar said, how were there any ships left for them to take?
Fen frowned.
As I think about it, that's remarkable, isn't it? There were dozens remaining, as if the winds left them alone, because the enemy needed them.
Storms. I've been thinking too much like an Alethi, Dalinar said. Boots on stone, but the enemy moved into Marat immediately, a perfect position from which to launch at Thalen City.
We need to revise our plans, Ben said.
Peace, Your Majesty, Aladar said. We have armies in Thalen City already. Good Alethi troops. Nobody is better on the ground than Alethi infantry.
We have three divisions there right now, Dalinar said. We'll want at least three more.
Sir, Fen's son said. Bright Lord, that's not enough.
Dalinar glanced at Fen. Her wizened admiral nodded.
Speak, Dalinar said.
Sir, the youth said, we're glad to have your troops on the island. Collects breath. If you're going to get into a fight, you definitely want the Alethi on your side. But an enemy fleet is a much larger problem than you're assuming. One you can't easily fix by moving troops around. If the enemy ships find Thalen City well defended, they'll just sail on and attack Karbranth or Dumedari, or any number of defenseless cities along the coast.
Dalinar grunted. He did think too much like an Alethi.
What then?
We need our own fleet, obviously, Fen's admiral said.
He had a thick accent of mushed syllables, like a mouthful of moss.
But most of our ships were lost to the blustering Everstorm. Half were abroad, caught unaware. My colleagues now dance upon the bottom of the depths.
And the rest of your fleet was stolen,
Dalinar said with a grunt.
What else do we have?
His Majesty Taravangian has ships at our port,
the Vaiden High Prince said. All eyes turned toward Taravangian.
Merchant ships only,
the old man said.
Vessels that carried my healers. We haven't a true navy, but I did bring 20 ships. I could perhaps provide 10 more from Karbranth.
The storm took a number of our ships, the Vaiden High Prince said, but the civil war was more devastating.
We lost hundreds of sailors. We have more ships than we have crew for right now.
Ben joined Dalinar beside the map.
We might be able to scrape together a semblance of a navy to intercept the enemy, but the fighting will be on the decks of ships. We'll need troops.
You'll have them, Dalinar said.
A Lethi who've never seen a rough sea in their lives? Ben asked, skeptical.
She looked to the Aesish generals.
Tashik has a navy, doesn't it? Staffed and supplemented by Aesish troops?
The generals conferred in their own language. Finally, one spoke through an interpreter.
The 13th Battalion, Red and Gold, has men who do a rotation on ships and patrol the Grand Waterway. Getting others here would take much time, but the 13th is already stationed in Yakaved.
We'll supplement them with some of my best men, Dalinar said.
Storms, we need those Windrunners active.
Fenn, would your admirals present a suggested course for the gathering and deployment of a unified fleet?
Sure,
the short woman said. She leaned in, speaking under her breath.
I warn you, many of my sailors follow the passions. You're going to have to do something about these claims of heresy, Blackthorn. Already there's talk among my people that this is, at long last, the right time for the Thalans to break free from the Vorin Church.
I won't recant, Dalinar said.
Even if it causes a wholesale religious collapse in the middle of a war?
He didn't reply, and she let him withdraw from the table, thinking about other plans. He spoke with the others about various items, thanked Navani, again, for holding everything together. Then eventually, he decided to go back down below and take a few reports from his stewards. On his way out, he passed Heravangian, who had taken a seat by the wall. The old man looked distracted by something.
Heravangian, Dalinar said. We'll leave troops in Yakaved, too, in case I'm wrong. Don't worry.
The old man looked to Dalinar, then strangely wiped tears from his eyes.
Are you in pain? Dalinar asked.
Yes, but it is nothing you can fix.
He hesitated.
You are a good man, Dalinar Cullen. I did not expect that.
Ashamed by that, Dalinar hurried from the room, followed by his guards. He felt tired, which seemed unfair, considering he'd just spent a week basically sleeping. Before seeking his stewards, Dalinar stopped on the fourth floor from the bottom. An extended walk from the lifts took him to the outer wall of the tower, where a small series of rooms smelled of incense. People lined the hallways, waiting for glyph wards or to speak with an ardent. More than he'd expected, but then they didn't have much else to do, did they?
Is that how you think of them already? A part of him asked. Only here to seek spiritual welfare because they don't have anything better to do?
Dalinar kept his chin high, resisting the urge to shrink before their stares. He passed several ardents and stepped into a room lit and warmed by braziers, where he asked after Kadash. He was directed onto a garden balcony where a small group of ardents was trying to farm. Some placed seed paste, while others were trying to get some shale bark starters to take along the wall. An impressive project, and one he didn't remember ordering them to begin. Kadash was quietly chipping creme off a planter box. Dalinar settled down beside him. The scarred ardent glanced at him and kept working.
It's very late coming, Dalinar said, but I want to apologize to you for Rathalas.
I don't think I'm the one you need to apologize to, Kadash said. Those who could bear an apology are now in the Tranquiline Halls.
Still, I made you a part of something terrible.
I chose to be in your army, Kadash said. I've found peace with what we did. Found it among the Ardents, where I no longer shed the blood of men. I suppose it would be foolish of me to suggest the same to you.
Dalinar took a deep breath.
I'm releasing you and the other Ardents from my control. I won't put you in a position where you have to serve a heretic. I'll give you to Heravangian, who remains orthodox.
No.
I don't believe you have the option to
just listen for one storming moment, Dalinar,
Kadash snapped. Then he sighed, forcibly calming himself.
You assume that because you're a heretic, we don't want anything to do with you.
You proved that a few weeks ago when we dueled.
We don't want to normalize what you've done or what you're saying. That doesn't mean we will abandon our posts. Your people need us, Dalinar, even if you believe you don't.
Dalinar walked to the edge of the garden, where he rested his hands on the stone railing. Beyond him, clouds mustered at the base of the peaks like a phalanx protecting its commander. From up here, it looked like the entire world was nothing more than an ocean of white broken by sharp peaks. His breath puffed in front of him, cold as the frost lands, though it didn't seem as bad inside the tower.
"Are any of those plants growing?" he asked softly.
"No," Kadash said from behind. "We aren't sure if it's the cold or the fact that few storms reach this high."
He kept scraping.
"What will it feel like when a storm goes high enough to engulf this entire tower?"
"Like we're surrounded by dark confusion," Dalinar said. "The only light coming in flashes we can't pinpoint or comprehend. Angry winds trying to tow us in a dozen different directions, or barring that, rip our limbs from our bodies."
He looked toward Kadash.
"Like always."
"The Almighty was a constant light."
"And?"
"And now you make us question. You make me question. Being an Ardent is the only thing that lets me sleep at night, Dalinar. You want to take that from me, too? If he's gone, there's only the storm."
"I think there must be something beyond. I asked you before, what did worship look like before Vornism? What did..."
"Dalinar, please, just stop."
Kadash drew in a deep breath.
"Release a statement. Don't let everyone keep whispering about how you went into hiding. Say something pedantic like, 'I'm pleased with the work the Vorin Church does and support my Ardents if I myself no longer have the faith I once did.' Give us permission to move on. Storms, this isn't the time for confusion. We don't even know what we're fighting."
Kadash didn't want to know that Dalinar had met the thing they were fighting. Best not to speak of that. But Kadash's question did leave him considering. Odium wouldn't be commanding the day-to-day operations of his army, would he? Who did that? The Fused? The Voidspren? Dalinar strolled a short distance from Kadash, then looked toward the sky.
"Stormfather," he asked, "do the enemy forces have a king or a high prince? Maybe a head Ardent? Someone other than Odium?"
The Stormfather rumbled.
"Again, I do not see as much as you think I do. I am the passing storm, the winds of the tempest. All of this is me. But I am not all of it, any more than you control each breath that leaves your mouth."
Dalinar sighed. It had been worth the thought.
"There is one I have been watching," the Stormfather added. "I can see her when I don't see others."
"A leader?" Dalinar asked.
"Maybe. Men, both human and singer, are strange in what or whom they revere. Why do you ask?"
Dalinar had decided not to bring anyone else into one of the visions because he worried about what Odium would do to them. But that wouldn't count for people already serving Odium, would it?
"When is the next high storm?"
Teravangian felt old. His age was more than the aches that no longer faded as the day proceeded. It was more than the weak muscles which still surprised him when he tried to lift an object that should have seemed light. It was more than finding that he'd slept through yet another meeting, despite his best efforts to pay attention. It was even more than slowly seeing almost everyone he'd grown up with fade away and die. It was the urgency of knowing that tasks he started today he wouldn't finish. He stopped in the hallway back to his rooms, hand resting on the strata-lined wall. It was beautiful, mesmerizing, but he only found himself wishing for his gardens in Carbranth. Other men and women got to live out their waning hours in comfort, or at least familiarity.
He let Morrell take him by the arm and guide him to his rooms. Normally, Taravangian would have been bothered by the help. He did not like being treated like an invalid. Today, though? Well, today he would suffer the indignity. It was a lesser one than collapsing in the hallway. Inside the room, Adratagia sat amid 6 different scribbling span reeds, buying and trading information like a merchant at market. She looked at him, but knew him well enough not to comment on his exhausted face or slow steps. Today was a good day of average intelligence, perhaps a little on the stupid side, but he'd take that. He seemed to be having fewer and fewer intelligent days, and the ones he did have frightened him. Taravangian settled down in a plush, comfortable seat, and Mabin went to get him some tea. Well? Adratagia asked. She'd grown old, too, with enormous bags around her green eyes, the persistent kind formed by drooping skin. She had liver spots and wispy hair. No man would look at her and see the mischievous child she'd once been, the trouble the two of them had gotten into.
Varko?
Adratagia asked.
My apologies, he said. Dalinar Kholin has recovered.
A problem?
An enormous one.
Taravangian took the tea from Mabin.
More than you can guess, I should say, even with the diagram before you. But please, give me time to consider. My mind is slow today. Have you reports?
Adratagia flipped over a paper from one of her stacks.
Murloc seems to have settled in the Horn Eater Peaks. Yoshor is on his way there now. We might again soon have access to the death rattles.
Very well.
We've found what happened to Graves, Adratagia continued. Scavengers found the storm-blown wreckage of his wagon, and there was an intact span reed inside.
Graves is replaceable.
And the shards?
Irrelevant,
Taravangian said.
We won't win the prize through force of arms. I was reluctant to let him try his little coup in the first place.
He and Graves had disagreed about the diagram's instructions, to kill Dalinar or recruit him, and who was to be king of Alethkar. Well, Taravangian had been wrong about the diagram himself many times, so he'd allowed Graves to move forward with his own plots, according to his own readings of the diagram. While the man's schemes had failed, so had Taravangian's attempt to have Dalinar executed. So perhaps neither of them had read the diagram correctly. He took some time to recover, frustrated that he should need to recover from a simple walk. A few minutes later, the guard admitted Malata. The Radiant wore her usual skirt and leggings, Thalen style, with thick boots. She took a seat across from Taravangian at the low table, then sighed in a melodramatic way.
This place is awful. Every last idiot here is frozen, ears to toes.
Had she been this confident before bonding a spren? Taravangian hadn't known her well then. Oh, he'd managed the project, full of eager recruits from the diagram, but the individuals hadn't mattered to him. Until now.
Your spren, Adratagia asked, getting out a sheet of paper. Has she anything to report?
No, Malata said. Only the tidbit from earlier about other visions Dalinar hasn't shared with everyone.
And?
Taravangian asked.
Has the spren expressed any reservations? About the work you've given her?
Damnation, Malata said, rolling her eyes. You're as bad as Kholin's scribes, always poking.
We need to be cautious, Malata,
Taravangian said.
We can't be certain what your spren will do as her self-awareness grows. She will surely dislike working against the other orders.
You're as frozen as the lot of them, Malata said.
She started glowing, stormlight rising from her skin. She reached forward, whipping off her glove, safe hand, no less, and pressing it against the table. Marks spread out from the point of contact, little swirls of blackness etching themselves into the wood.
The scent of burning filled the air, but the flames didn't persist if she didn't will them to. The swirls and lines extended across the tabletop, a masterwork of engraving accomplished in moments. Malata blew off the ash. The surge she used, division, caused objects to degrade, burn, or turn to dust. It also worked on people.
Spark is fine with what we're doing, Malata said, pressing her finger down and adding another swirl to the table. I told you the rest of them are idiots. They assume all the Spren are going to be on their side. Never mind what the Radiance did to Spark's friends. Never mind that organized devotion to honor is what killed hundreds of Ash Spren in the first place.
And Odium?
Taravangian asked, curious. The diagram warned that the personalities of the Radiance would introduce great uncertainty to their plans.
Spark is game for whatever it takes to get vengeance, and what lets her break stuff, Malata grinned. Someone should have warned me how fun this would be. I'd have tried way harder to land the job.
What we do is not fun,
Taravangian said.
It is necessary, but it is horrible. In a better world, Graves would have been right. We would be allies to Dalinar Kholin.
You're too fond of the Blackthorn Vargo, Adratagia warned.
It will cloud your mind. No, but I do wish I hadn't gotten to know him. That will make this difficult.
Taravangian leaned forward, holding his warm drink. Boiled Ingo tea with mint. Smells of home. For the start, he realized he'd probably never live in that home again, would he? He'd thought perhaps he would return in a few years. He wouldn't be alive in a few years.
Adro,
he continued.
Dalinar's recovery convinces me we must take more drastic action. Are the secrets ready?
Almost, she said, moving some other papers.
My scholars in Yakaved have translated the passages we need, and we have the information from Malata's spying. But we need some way to disseminate the information without compromising ourselves. Assign it to Dova,
Taravangian said.
Have her write a scathing, anonymous essay, then leak it to Tashik. Leak the translations from the Dawn Chant the same day. I want it all to strike at once.
He set aside the tea. Suddenly, a sense of Carbranth made him hurt.
It would have been so much better for Dalinar to have died by the assassin's blade. For now, we must leave him to the enemy's desires, and that will not be as kind as a quick death.
Will it be enough? Malata asked. That old axe hound is tough.
It will be enough. Dalinar would be the first to tell you that when your opponent is getting back up, you must act quickly to crush his knees. Then he will bow and present you his skull. Oh, Dalinar, you poor, poor man.